pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to MLS Cup Today. Yes, it's MLS Cup week here on Soccer Today. It's Tuesday, November 5th. And to start MLS Cup Today, to talk about TFC side and MLS side as well, joining us from the Sporting News and from Canada FC on Sirius XM Channel 167, Rudy Schuler joins us. How are you, Rudy?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Rudy, this is 3 and 4 years that here in the city of Toronto that the TFC has been involved in the MLS Cup. If you'd gone back in a time machine and told us that in 2011 or so, I think we would have thought we were all insane. But nonetheless, here we are. Is there a different feeling around this this run from the others in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, there has to be, right? I mean, just the way the season has played out, you know, if you look back to maybe June, July, there was a lot of doubt whether TFC would even make the playoffs. And, of course, the Vanny out crowd was, you know, sharpening their knives and getting their pitchforks ready and whatnot. And, yeah, it didn't look good from a TFC perspective. So, obviously, the run that they're on right now, I believe it's 13 straight without a defeat in MLS play, that catapulted them to where they are. But I don't think the team is much different than it was back then. But circumstances are what they are. But regardless, you know, it definitely feels different because obviously in 2017, TFC was a dominant force. And even, you know, for a lot of 2016, it was the same thing. They were scoring a lot of goals. Maybe they weren't as dominant as they were the following year. But in 2016, they were definitely one of the top teams all the way through the entire year. 2019 doesn't feel like that at all. And, you know, this is the first time of the three, in 4 years, that TFC goes in as the decided underdog. I don't think that was the case in the two that were at BMO Field against Seattle. But this time around, they are definitely the decided underdog. So, you know, there's a lot of narratives at play, but it's a whole different feeling for a very familiar MLS Cup final.
Fair enough. You mentioned Greg Vanney in there and the Vanney out crowd. How much credit does Greg Vanney get for what they've done in the playoffs with a injured roster?
It has to be a huge amount of credit. I know some people won't like to hear that. But when you take away the club's top striker and top defender, you know, and are able to take down, you know, number one and number two seeds in a row, both away from home, you know, that to me is the mark of a well-prepared team. A team that is extremely well motivated and plays well for each other. And, you know, a lot of that has to go on the coaching staff. Of course, a lot of that also has to go on the players as well. But the coaches are what they're the ones who have to get that out of the players. So to me, I think Vanny's shown that over the course of his coaching career that he is a very good motivator in terms of getting players ready for tournaments. Maybe not so much for seasons outside of that 17 campaign. But when it comes to these do or die situations, you know, he's one of the best in the league. So I think he's earned himself a lot more leash than he had, you know, 3-4 months ago. And I think that he's basically saved his job by, you know, the way that TFC has made their run through this playoffs.
Yesterday, Rudy, was International Cliche Day. So let me ask you this cliche. This MLS Cup will be different. It's on the road for Toronto FC, and the cliche is in soccer, on the road is a bit harder than at home. Is it going to be the case on Sunday?
Yeah, yeah. I think if this game was played at BMO Field again, TFC would be able to play a little bit more relaxed and know that they'd have the crowd behind them. And again, talking about cliches, you know, it's always easier to win at home and you know, the crowd gets you up from games and all those other things that you hear that the athletes kind of spout off. A lot of that is true. A lot of that is a little more mental than anything else, obviously. But those mental edges count, especially in games like this where it's a one-off and every little kind of advantage will play into the ultimate result. So, yeah, I actually didn't know that yesterday was International Cliche Day or I would have had a field day with it. But, no, it's absolutely going to be harder on the road. And this Seattle team is different than the ones that TFC faced in 16 and 17. It's a lot more of an attacking team, a lot more of a team that likes to possess the ball and is more comfortable being the imposers of their will. Whereas I think Seattle in 16 and 17 were very comfortable being the reactionaries rather than the proactive team. So that being said, you know, they're going to have 69,000 people behind them. And, you know, I believe they're 11, they've won 11 straight home games in the playoffs. So, yeah, you know, the odds are definitely stacked against TFC, but I wouldn't say that they are going to go out there playing scared. I do think that they will enjoy this environment because it's something a little new. It's something different for a lot of these players who have kind of been through this ring already. Now they're coming at it from a different angle. Maybe it's kind of similar to what they were, the way it was in the CONCACAF Champions League in 2018, where they were the underdogs against those Mexican teams. So maybe they can draw from that experience. But it'll definitely be a different kind of scenario and a harder scenario at CenturyLink Field than had it been played at BMO.
Also, I know from time to time on the sporting news you write about other things in soccer. Sometimes it's mixed martial art or combat sport. And the third fight of a rivalry, the rubber match when it's 1-1, is always fascinating and extremely important because it determines who's going to win the trilogy. This is the trilogy fight between Seattle and Toronto FC. If you have to handicap, right, I know we're almost a week away still, but as of today, if you handicap this fight, who has the mental advantage heading into the rubber match?
That's a very interesting question because I don't know if anyone does. You know, you can't really say, well, one team has more experience in these situations than the other because the only three MLS Cups that these teams have played are against each other. Maybe TFC is a little bit more battle-tested because they had that CCL run and they played, you know, they won Canadian championships as well. So they maybe have a little bit more knockout success than Seattle does. But then Seattle has been a better team over the entire course of the season. You know, so it's really tough to say who has the mental edge right now because, as I just mentioned before, you know, you have home field advantage, which obviously Seattle is going to be playing off of. But then you have the underdog narrative, which I'm sure that TFC is going to be feeding off of as well because they fed off that underdog narrative in Atlanta and in New York City. So I think both of these teams have a lot of kind of advantages, but they kind of counterbalance each other. And if you look at the history of the two teams, they've always been, you know, very evenly matched. Even when TFC was dominating those MLS Cups, when you headed into those games, it wasn't obvious what was going to happen until it happened, right? Yes, you could say that, you know, TFC 2017, that was obvious, but you know, the Sounders looked very good in the playoffs, a lot better in those playoffs than TFC did, to be quite frank. So the way that each team has kind of gotten to the situation, you know, TFC had to kick and scrape and play an ugly game and you know, maybe dabble in the dark arts a little bit more than Seattle did versus what Seattle did, where they, you know, they looked like a dominant team in the earlier rounds, and then they did what they had to do against LAFC, and they dominated LAFC in Bank of California Stadium. You know, it's a interesting kind of dynamic because both of these teams come in as very different, you know, with a very different route and a very different method of getting there. And I don't know if one has a clear-cut advantage over the other because both of these teams have shown that they are able to, you know, change on the fly and adapt to certain situations. And both of these teams have a lot of talent. I would say that the one advantage that Seattle has is that everyone's healthy. You know, you have the big question mark, is Josie Altidore healthy? Seattle doesn't have to worry about that because, you know, Raul Ruiz Diaz and Nico Ladero, the two guys that really charge their attack, and Jordan Morris as well, to a slightly lesser extent, but not much lesser. Those guys are healthy, and those game changers are healthy, and all of them are. Whereas TFC, you know, obviously Pozuelo is a game changer, and to a lesser extent, the Nick DeLeons and Richard Larreas have become game changers off the bench. You wouldn't bet on them being that way all the time. So maybe the one advantage that Seattle has is that they have more game changers at their availability. So maybe that's the slightest thing that will push them over the edge. I don't know, but to me, it's too even to call in terms of who has an advantage over the other, because the teams are so different and the way they got there is so different that it kind of cancels each other out.
For about a month now, we've had to ask the Josie question before every matchup. So I'm going to ask you the Josie question. Do you think he'll be ready? Does it matter if he's ready? How does TFC approach things if he's not ready? Like, i.e., do they use him as a decoy off the bench, or how do you think that's going to play out?
I think he'll be in the 18, regardless of whether he's ready or not, to talk to your decoy point. I think that, Jozy Altidore has been against Seattle, over the years, such a thorn in their side. Even this year, he scored 2 goals against them in the game they played against each other at Century League Field. And, of course, he scored the MLS Cup winning goal 2 years ago. Should have scored against him in 2016. It's not for that Stephen Fry save. But, he's been such a big game player, especially against Seattle, that for sure I think Greg Manning's going to use him as, a mental chess piece, regardless of whether he's ready or not. So it would not surprise me to see him in that 18. It would very much surprise me to see him in the starting 11. I don't think he's anywhere near ready for that. Of course, I think this whole lead-up to the MLS Cup now, it's all mind games. Is Jozy ready? Is not. Like you said, we've been asking this question for a month now, and the question is going to get louder and louder every day that passes until the game comes. So if I were Greg Manning, I'd totally hold that chip or that card close to my chest, but also, tip the hand a little bit to say that, maybe Josie's improving here and there. You could even see how it was yesterday when Jozy was asked about it versus how Manny was asked about it. Jozy said it would take a miracle for him to be ready for this game. And then Manny immediately said, well, he believes in miracles. So, there's obviously some mind games being played there. There's some seeds of doubt being sown. That being said, he hasn't played in since what, October, early October. I don't think he's kicked a ball since then. I know he's been training. I know his fitness is up, but it's a quad strain, which means he can't shoot the ball. He can't strike the ball. And as a striker, obviously, that is your main duty. So I'm sure they'll be looking at every kind of alternative they can have in terms of, if they can give him a cortisone shot or whatever to get him as ready as possible, because, you're going to throw caution to the wind here. But if I were a betting man, which I'm not, I would say that he would be on the bench to start. And if he's even at 50%, then you'll see him in the game maybe in the last 20 minutes.
I think a lot of TFC fans will hope for that for both the reasons that he might be able to help TFC over the hump, but he also probably would strain that just enough to have to sit out for a little bit while longer after that, if you follow that. This is a weird question to ask in a lead up to an MLS Cup, but I'm fascinated by what this run means for TFC in a larger sense. I think we all agree there's a transition that needs to happen at some point, but has this run to the MLS Cup final indicated that they are back to their elite form moving forward, or do they still need to do a serious rethink in the offseason?
I think there's going to be some overhaul. I don't think you can have a team built around Michael Bradley for that much longer. I feel like he'll be back, and obviously if they win MLS Cup, the reporting is that he will be back at his current salary, which is, a stroke of brilliance by his agent, six years ago now. But either way, I think he will be back. But I do think that his days as, the linchpin of the team are coming to a close. I think there's a maximum of another year of that. Obviously, I've got tremendous respect for Michael Bradley and what he is as a player and as a person and what he's meant to the TFC organization. He's a fantastic leader. He's well liked by his teammates, unfortunately, time moves on for everybody. You can see he's clearly lost a step, but his soccer IQ is high enough that he could still kind of push that to the side a little bit and still be a very effective player. But I have to wonder, after next year, because I do think he's going to be back after next year, how much of that soccer IQ can make up for the fact that his athleticism is going away. And then there are spots all over the field, right? Jozy Altidore, who just resigned at the beginning of the season. Obviously, the big narrative around him is his health issues, and he's going to be turning 30 this month. So his health issues, his ability to stay healthy, are not going to get better. But he's going to be around. Do you complement him with someone else? A big name DP striker, if you can get Michael Bradley on a TAM deal. There's all sorts of question marks that I think that Ollie Curtis and Greg Vanney will have to take into account in the off season. But are they elite right now? Well, they're playing like they are, even though they've had to scratch and claw through the playoffs. They haven't lost an MLS game since August 3rd, I believe it is. So they're playing like an elite team, and I think they have the elite mentality, and they have an elite coaching staff and an organization that is among the elite in MLS. So now it's about getting that roster up to that standard as well, because I don't think it's quite there. I don't think the roster top to bottom is the same as an LAFC or even a Seattle or an Atlanta. They're in the next tier down, I'd say. But, you know, I don't ever bet against TFC from spending the resources to get themselves back up to that level. So I don't think they have to make too many changes. There's going to be some off-season changes, there always are. But I don't think they have to make too many changes to get back to that level, because obviously they're showing that they are able to compete at that level over a considerable stretch of time. So it's going to be interesting to see how TFC looks a year from now, because I do think that at the beginning of next season, they're not going to look too different. But for me, it's the following offseason, you know, 2020 offseason, leading into 2021, that I think that a lot of change is going to happen because of that Michael Bradley question.
When we look at Seattle, Rudy, the big difference since the 2017 and 2016 MLS Cup, of course, no Clint Dempsey, but the big, big difference is Raul Ruiz Diaz for Seattle, and Seattle able to score goals now, which was a difficult task for them in 2017-2016. Of course, 2016 famously in penalties, and 2017 they lost to Jose Altidore and TFC. So when you look at Seattle's capabilities now of scoring goals, we've seen it in the playoffs. We've seen crazy games with Seattle involved. So how does you handicap Seattle now that they are able to score goals in the playoffs, and they will probably be at least scoring one, I imagine, against TFC?
I think Seattle will definitely score. I think honestly both teams will probably score in this game. It's going to be interesting because, you know, TFC just eliminated a very high scoring team in Atlanta, you know, a very good team that gets a lot of balls into the net. And, the week previous to that, they did the same thing against NYCFC. And, New York City has been known to score quite willfully this season. So I don't think TFC is going to be too different in terms of what their strategy is in kind of keeping Seattle at bay. But from Seattle's perspective, you know, they're going to want to look to get behind TFC and to do what Atlanta couldn't do in that first half last week. Yes, they scored that opening goal, I think it was 3 minutes in. But after that, you know, they had quite a few good chances when they got behind TFC's kind of ridiculous high line that they finally fixed in the second half. If that happens, I think Seattle is a much better team of breaking on the counter and scoring. Just from that 300 monster that I mentioned before, Ruiz Diaz, as you mentioned, Nico Lodero, and Jordan Morris especially, who, you know, he's got tons of pace, and he loves to play very direct. So, it's going to be interesting because, as I mentioned before, this is a Seattle team that is not the same as they were, you know, when they met TFC in the MLS Cups in 2016-17. They're a lot less afraid of scoring goals. They're a lot less afraid of opening things up because they know that they have the recovery speed at the back to if there are holes, they can make recovery runs. You know, Brad Smith, he's a fullback that's just going to bomb up and down that side. And to me, this is a team that's built for the stadium they're playing. They're playing on artificial turf. It's a huge, loud stadium. And, you know, when you play in that kind of environment, the best thing you can do is get the crowd involved. And the best way to do that is to score goals and score them quickly and score them frequently, rather. So this is a team that's built for that playing surface and also that massive crowd they're going to have. So I think they're going to try to impose their will from the very beginning. They're going to try to do what Atlanta did partially in that Eastern Conference final against TFC, but they're going to try to do it better than Atlanta did. You know, score that early goal and then keep the pressure on and keep their foot on Toronto's throats. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they try to pull that off and also how Toronto counteracts, because I think that if Greg Vanney has that same high line again, it's going to be suicide for them. But now they have Omar Gonzalez back, so maybe they're able to deal with it a little bit better. I don't know. But yeah, you're definitely right in saying that Seattle's going to score at least one. Now it's on the TFC to limit how many they do and obviously get the one or two on their own.
Rudy Schuler of the Sporting News and Canada FC on SiriusXM Channel 167. Rudy, what can the listeners find on the Sporting News right now?
Right now, we have just a little newser on what Altidore said yesterday. We're going to have a lot of coverage leading up to the MLS Cup. And, of course, Sporting News doesn't just do soccer. It does a lot of other things, too. But because we have the goal.com, let's call it the simulcast, we'll have a lot of their coverage as well. So, we'll have a lot of stuff going into the lead-up in this game.
Rudy Schuler, thank you very much for your time today. And we wish you a great and busy MLS Cup week.
Thanks, Jeff.
And we'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Dwayne Rollins with myself, Kevin Laramie. Dwayne, you excited about MLS Cup? Are you starting to get the jitters and the excitement going? I know it's only Tuesday. We've got a whole week to go, but it feels like it's going to go by quickly.
You know what? I it's a weird feeling compared to the last two, and I think that's because it's not here. I haven't completely, I see friends of mine that are, I've already got the shakes, I'm nervous, all that sort of stuff, and I'm not there. I mean, part of that's, I think, that I've had a bit of a step back from TFC this year in a lot of ways, but certainly I'm excited to watch them in here. I mean, I don't ever lose my fandom completely, for sure. When the game kicks off on Sunday, I'm going to want them to win. There's no doubt about that. But I will. And I have been thinking a little bit, and I am excited, actually, as weird as this sounds, to not go to Seattle, because I've done it twice in a row. And it's a different experience in the stadium, for sure. And had it been a little cheaper, had it been in LA, I think I would have gone, because LA is literally half the cost of what this was. Seattle, for whatever reason, is very difficult to get to via Toronto, from Toronto, in terms of pricing. So it is something that I have to prioritize for a lot of different reasons in my life right now. I mean, I just moved into a different apartment, which was a little expensive. So all of those real life factors played into that. But I'm excited to experience it with a lot of people in a setting that I've experienced a lot of TFC games in the past. It's sort of a different experience, right? Like, how many times have you dragged yourself out to the pub and watched the away big game viewings? Well, a lot, but none bigger than this, right? So that should be a fun, different experience, and to be in Toronto that day, and perhaps if they win, to go up to the airport for that, which I probably will, both for, journalism reasons. I'll get some noise, some sound for that day to share with all of you. But I think it'll be a fun experience that way. But what I am intrigued by, though, for sure, is this team and this run and what it means, and almost more so than the game, because I don't know what it means for TFC. We're going back 2 months ago. We were talking about Bania. We were talking about maybe it was time to move on from certain players. And now, how do you do that after you go to a championship game? Makes it very difficult.
But you'll see it happen like we do every year, 2-3 days MLS Cup. Yeah. Ask Raheem Edwards how he feels about the 2017 MLS Cup. Yeah, he probably feels bittersweet because 2 days later, he was gone.
I remember seeing Raheem Edwards at the parade. And, it was less than 12 hours after that he was gone. So he was probably still a little drunk when he found out. I mean, let's be honest. I'm assuming they were drinking some champagne on the bus.
Yeah, the headache was still there for sure.
Yeah, look. Yes, there would be some movement. What I mean, serious pivoting, a rebuilding season like that. And I don't know whether or not what's happened in the last 2 months is an indication that they need to do tweaks, or whether they need to still stick with a plan that might have been there 3 or 4 months ago, right? And this is weird to talk about this now, because we have a game to set up, and for sure we will do that. But it is something to think about. Like Vanny out, for instance. I was not ever I've never close to thinking he should be fired, ever. Had the losing continued through June, then maybe you would have had to make a decision. But What I was close to wondering about is whether Greg Vanney would be better off making a sideways move in the organization to be more of a technical director, run the academy, do the overall vision stuff, because I do think that he's very well respected in the organization and he's very good at that particular aspect of his job. But now here we are, and you can't ignore this. So now I think it'd be impossible to move on from him unless he decides to do so himself.
And it won't happen this time around. It's going to, at least if it happens, it's going to be in the next offseason, depending on what Ali Curtis and everything happens. I think it was a 2-year contract that he signed. I'm not totally sure. It might have been 3. But again, this is a conversation for maybe the offseason before. But that's the thing. With this run of TFC in the playoffs and the performance of players and, of course, the performance of Greg Vanney as the manager of these players, it is going to be, for the development recruitment of this team, like you mentioned, I don't want to say that it's going to delay a youth movement, because there's already a certain amount of youth movement with TFC, but it's a certain amount. It's Osorio, Schaffelberg, and there's a couple others, especially Larea. But it is going to maybe make it harder for the fans to accept a high turnover rate, even though a turnover rate might be needed sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the other part of it, too, is Ali Curtis, you mentioned. Ali Curtis did not have a full offseason to do what he needed to do last year, right? He came in, he was swept in, but everything in TFC's offseason between 18 and 19 was not how you would ever plan it out.
Yep.
Bezbachenko leaves suddenly. Then they have to replace him quickly. You know, Javinko leaves suddenly. What the hell are we supposed to do now? Vasquez leaves suddenly, and then you have to rebuild. The fact that they've managed to piece together this team is a testament both to how good they were in the past, how much resolve they had to continue, and the fact that they managed to find a great player in Pozuelo that I think had been targeted for a while, but they were more thinking that might move in the summer, right? So that's, you know, where he would have had a break and he would have came in for a half year, and they were probably looking at a revamp up in 2020, you know, after Javinko left at the end of this year. That was probably the plan. Javinko plays out, they give a wave to the crowd, everyone's happy, they bring in Pozuelo, there's a transition. That didn't happen. They had to scramble for it. So, look, what does this mean for a guy like that? Like Curtis, who really had this opportunity, had TFC continue on the path they were in June, to just go, okay, I can blow it up and reform this in my own image. But now you have to sort of go in between. But this is all stuff we have months to talk about. Really, we should probably focus on the more near future, yes, which is they can win a championship on Sunday.
Exactly. But before we get there, we're going to, throughout the week, we'll become more and more tactical, looking at what's going to happen on the pitch on Sunday. But here's a couple of items of news of note that I'm going to share with you, Dwayne. The first one is the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy arrives Tuesday in Seattle ahead of MLS Cup Final. The trophy is due to arrive in Seattle on Tuesday afternoon ahead of Sunday's MLS Cup Final. The trophy, known colloquially as MLS Cup, is set to arrive in true host city fashion, utilizing the Washington State ferry system with a 1:45 p.m. Pacific time arrival at Coleman Dock. So if you are in Seattle and you want to see the trophy arrive, you'll be able to do so at the Coleman Dock. There'll be an introduction. The trophy will proceed to the Space Needle, where more additional photo opportunities will be taking place. So the trophy, Dwayne, arrives in Seattle today, which is not really news, but it's just the trophy in... It's one of the nicest trophies in the world. We talk about trophy a lot since last week, I guess, on this show. And this one is a trophy that is truly awe-inspiring when you're physically next to it. Just the sheer size and the sheer shine of this trophy made by Tiffany really shows how glorious it truly is.
Tiffany said that, which is a, you know, they know what they're doing compared to, I think.
I don't want to compare it to anything. I didn't say anything. I didn't go there.
I think GE designed the Canadian Premier League trophy.
I was trying not to go there. I didn't want it to equivalent to, you went there. It's not me. It's you.
It spins and it designed. Oh, wait, it's not a microwave plate. Anyway. I don't actually remember how it arrived in Toronto. I'm sure a Mountie wrote in through Dad with on a moose or something. I don't know. Although there's neither in the city of Toronto, but I'm still sure that a Mountie rode in with a moose. That would have been how the U.S.-based league would have assumed Toronto would have wanted to come in.
Can you ride a moose? Like, can you actually ride a moose? Same thing.
Probably not very well. I wouldn't want to. Yeah, like I said, there has never been a Moose nor a Mountie in the city of Toronto. Well, there might have been a Mountie, but our police forces, the RCMP is out west. It's not here. Anyway.
Exactly.
Look, it's good. All that marketing initiative, they're trying to pump it up. Seattle's not a city that needs to have the hype going. I mean, it sold 69,000 tickets already.
I was going to say, sold out. Yeah. MLS Cup sold out, 70,000 people. That's going to be a fascinating game, and the setting and the amount of people watching, including it. And it's fun to see a big market like Seattle, for sure, and at Toronto as well. It's third time to charm. Well, Atlanta was fun too. You're right. And you mentioned earlier how great it will be because we're not traveling for this one. I wanted to, but then, of course, I had to put the price of a car in my mouth. So I'm not going to Seattle this time. I'm going next year for sure in MLS Cup, wherever it is. But I do feel the same excitement as you do because I'll be in studio all week long. I'll be in the studio all day long. Anything happens of note, we will talk about it. And just before we finish the show talking about Carlos Vela, one more thing I want to run by you. We know who's going to referee the game. And if you had to guess, Dwayne, who's going to be the referee on Sunday?
Oh, Toledo?
No. It's going to be the 2019 MLS Referee of the Year. Alan Chapman has been named the head referee for the 2019 MLS Cup. The professional referee organization announced Monday Chapman will co-oversee MLS Cup for a second time, having also worked the 2017 MLS Cup and earning MLS Referee of the Year during that campaign as well. Assisting him during Sunday's match at CenturyLink Field will be 2019 MLS Assistant Referee of the Year Brian Dunn, FIFA official Corey Rockwell, and MLS Referee of the Year nominee Rubiel Vasquez as the fourth official. Brian Pushel is the referee assistant referee. The reserve assistant referee Edvin Jurisevich will be the video assistant referee, and Cameron Blanchard will serve as the assistant video assistant referee. I guess they should have an assistant to the assistant, because then it would be the assistant video assistant referee.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a big deal for those guys, obviously, and I'm sure that there's a financial benefit to them to be given this opportunity in terms of their bonuses within pro. Let's just hope it's a good game referee. I mean, if you want to be a TFC fan and be superstitious, the fact that he refereed the 2017 final should give you some hope. But, you know, as I said, we just want it to be a good referee. I do have more respect for the referees than I let on. My biggest complaint is their direction they get. It's
VAR.
I think they're told to call these games lighter in the playoffs, and they have to. Otherwise, they're not getting more jobs, and I think that's ridiculous. Never understood it.
Dwayne's favorite video of 2019 is the video of the Monaco player kicking the VAR in yesterday's World of Soccer. So that gives you all you need to know. And I will see if we'll see VAR at MLS Cup for the first time.
Oh, boy.
We'll see. We'll see if that happens. I don't think it will, because we haven't really seen it in the playoffs so far. Before we say goodbye for today, yesterday it was announced that there was an announcement in a press conference scheduled in L.A., and we kind of figured it was for this reason. Carlos Vela is your MVP of the 2019 season. The Landon Donovan MLS MVP award has been given to Carlos Vela, also the Golden Boot winner. And you can see images of him right now with the two trophies on your screen. 2019 MVP Carlos Vela of LAFC.
In related news, Kevin, I'm looking out my balcony right now at Lake Ontario, and I can confirm that the water is still wet.
Oh, okay, cool. And air is still dry, and the sky is still blue or cloudy.
Yeah, a bit of both right now, I would have to say, here in the city of Toronto for your weather report. Yeah, no, there's no other question. It was like the 2017 or 2015 when Javinko won. I mean, there was no other option here. He had the most dominant season since Javinko. He was clearly, to me, it wasn't ever even a question. I mean, I know some people wanted Ibra to maybe be considered end.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that at all, particularly when you looked at the most valuable to his team aspect to it.
Yeah, he's a detriment to his team at some point during the season. We all know that.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, before the rumors about Bologna, thoughts on that quick?
Oh, my God, can you imagine? Well, he never come to Montreal. That's one of the moves Bologna will do that will never come Montreal's way, and I hope so. But Ibra to Bologna. Walter Sabatini is interested, and he's working on making it official, at least not official, but reality. We'll see if the technical director of the overarching partnership, ownership of Bologna and the Montreal Impact, Walter Sabatini, is working on it, apparently. So, well, not apparently. He's open about it, so he is working about it.
Yeah, look, Italian football has been in the news for all the wrong reasons of late, and we haven't had a chance to talk about the Balotelli incident on the weekend because of our focus on MLS Cup weekend. But I would be reluctant as any player, particularly a player who is not, you know, lily white, as Ibra is not, to go to that cesspool right now. And I said that word purposely. They need to get themselves in check. I mean, the city of Verona is threatening to sue Mario Balotelli for defamation.
The president of the club said, that's not true, it didn't happen. And there's, like, clear video. Like, there's video footage and audio evidence. Come on.
Yeah, it's silly. I mean, it's beyond, it beggars belief. I mean, the world is like that now. It's up is down, down is up, right? Like, if you say something isn't true long enough, even when evidence is right in front of you, eventually you wear people down. It's sad, but anyway, it's beyond just football, and we have that conversation. But
yeah,
I think it goes without saying that we're both pretty disgusted by what happened in the weekend. And say what you want about Mario Balotelli, and he certainly has made mistakes in his career. He does not deserve to be part of that. And he has always consistently stood up for himself when it comes to issues of racial abuse. Maybe kicking the ball in the stands is not the right approach, but what is the right approach at that point?
I don't
know when to say it isn't. For God's sakes, nothing else works. So we might as well kick a ball into the stands at them because they don't listen otherwise. And now at least you're getting attention. It wouldn't have got attention otherwise.
And what drives that behavior also is the fact that no one else goes to bat for you. No one else stands up and truly make a stand for you. So yeah, it's the onus of respect is on you at that moment, and you have to fight for yourself. If the rules were applied the way they're supposed to, and yes, there was a halt in the game, but the halt of the game was more because he kicked the damn ball in the stands than to stop the damn racist chants. If you actually do what's supposed to be done, which is, I believe, stop the play, announcement on the PA to stop the racist chants, there's a 5-minute wait, plays resumes, and if it happens again, the match can be called off for it. If that would happen time and time again, it's been what, few times now in a month that happened in Italy? So yeah, maybe you do have to apply the rules, but then the reaction. If someone tells you or I or anyone rational listening to this show that what you do is offensive to me and I don't like it, your normal reaction is to be, well, I'm sorry, and I'll try to be cognitive of this and act accordingly. Not like, well, it's not my fault. I wasn't intended to be racist, and it's your fault for being soft. No, jeez, the world is upside down. You're right.
Yeah. On that note, we'll have more MLS Cup coverage tomorrow. We got Matt Pence booked to talk from the Seattle perspective. If you're listening from Seattle, we'll be doing this all week, Kevin. We'll be talking Toronto-Seattle. Toronto-Seattle is kind of the approach that we're going to take. To give it an even keel, one to make sure that we're giving full and fair treatment to our Seattle listeners out there. I think everyone knows where I'm based, so we give Toronto a lot of coverage throughout the years just by virtue of me being here. We'll give it a fair. We are an MLS show, not a Toronto show. So on that note, Kevin, I'll let you wrap it up as always.
As always, you can follow us on social media at Soccer Today SBN, at Kev Laramie for myself, and at Soccer Today SBN. I said that already. At 24th minute for Dwayne. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of MLS Cup Today, all week up until the big game on Sunday. And you can find the podcast version everywhere you find your podcast. You're watching this right now live on Twitter. Make sure you follow us. And if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe right here in the bottom of this video. Until tomorrow, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.